You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
A breach in several companies' consumer-facing systems is attributed to a third-party chat vendor. Crooks are tampering with chip debit cards. Ocean Lotus is back with a macOS backdoor. A Mirai variant was used against banks earlier this year. Energetic Bear may be exploiting misconfigured switches. Microsoft looks into Office 360 outages. Russia warns Britain against playing with fire. And three cyber startups are Data Tribe finalists. From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, April 6th, 2018. Earlier this week, an issue with the IT supply chain hit pipeline operators. Yesterday, there was another third-party breach disclosed that affected a major airline and a major retailer, and several other companies as well. Delta Airlines and Sears both said that hundreds of thousands of customers' personal information was exposed through an online chat service they used for customer support. The chat service was provided by Silicon Valley firm 24/7 AI. That company said in a statement, quote, 24/7 AI discovered and contained an incident potentially affecting the online customer payment information of a small number of our client companies, and affected clients have been notified. The incident began on September 26th and was discovered and contained on October 12, 2017. We have notified law enforcement and are cooperating fully to ensure the protection of our clients and their customers' online safety. We are confident that the platform is secure, and we are working diligently with our clients to determine if any of their customer information was accessed. End quote. Sears said in an announcement dated Wednesday that 24/7 AI notified them of the breach in mid-March. Delta was more specific in its statement, saying they were notified last week on March 28th. Both companies said that they'd been taking steps to contain the damage since they were notified. Other companies were also affected, Best Buy among them, and no doubt others will come to light soon. Nick Bilagorski, cybersecurity strategist at Juniper Networks, pointed out that the companies named as having suffered loss of customer data in the incident weren't themselves breached. It was a third-party breach that hit them via a vendor. Bilagorski said, quote, third parties have been the vector of attack in many high-profile breaches, and I anticipate this trend will continue. In recent years, 63% of breaches were traced to third-party vendors, according to the Soha Systems survey on third-party risk management. If a hacker can breach a company and pretend to be a legitimate vendor, they may have full access to a company's network for months, plenty of time to monetize their attack. End quote. Monir Hahad, head of Juniper Threat Labs, thinks it possible that there may be a systemic issue here. He said, quote, "It is important to understand that this breach is different from some past breaches, such as Target, where the third-party vendor was a vehicle for an intrusion into the final victim's own network." End quote. Both Villagorsky and Hahad agree that businesses need to think in terms of the security of their vendor supply chain. As Hahad noted, quote, "At the end of the day, it's companies like Delta Air and Sears that end up in the news, not so much the third-party vendor." End quote. The U.S. Secret Service has warned banks that chipped corporate debit cards are being tampered with by criminals. They intercept new cards in the mail, tamper with their chip, and then send them on to their ultimate corporate users. It appears the operation works like this. Once the crooks take the card from the mail, they heat it to melt the glue holding the chip, then they replace the new card's chip with an older one they have, and then put the new chip into an older card. The new card with the older chip is then put back into the mail. When the company gets the card, they'll activate it, but in the meantime, the criminals can make purchases and steal funds using the new chip they retained. How the criminals get to the mail is unclear. It may be a Postal Service inside job, or perhaps the crooks are just keeping an eye on corporate mailboxes. New activity by the Ocean Lotus threat group is being observed. Security company Trend Micro has detected a new macOS backdoor being used against an array of human rights groups. Ocean Lotus is believed to operate on behalf of the government of Vietnam. The infection vector is thought to be a malicious Word document distributed by phishing emails. Security intelligence firm Recorded Future says a Mirai variant has been responsible for attacks on European financial institutions earlier this year. Cisco's Talos Security Research Unit thinks it knows how Energetic Bear has been gaining access to systems associated with the U.S. power grid. Talos believes the Russian threat actor that U.S. CERT warned about is getting in by taking advantage of misconfigured Cisco switches. Microsoft is working to find what caused the widespread Office 360 outages being experienced across Europe today. The problem appears to be accidental, probably a glitch and not an attack, but investigation is in progress. Facebook CEO Zuckerberg will testify before two U.S. Senate committees next week, the day before he appears in the House. On April 10th, he'll answer questions from the Senate Judiciary and Commerce Committees. Russia warns the UK that if it continues to accuse Russia of things like the Salisbury nerve agent attacks, Russia will take appropriate measures. Britain, Moscow says, is playing with fire. That fire is widely expected in the West to take the form of stepped-up cyber attacks, at least initially. And finally, in what for us is local news, since these guys are just on the other side of the floor from us, Data Tribe has announced the three finalists in its $2 million cyber funding competition. Out of almost 100 applicants, the finalists are CyberCon, which combines machine learning with the ability to comb some of the most restricted parts of the internet to deliver timely and active predictions that help its customers become proactive about security. Imogen, a unique sensor platform company that combines hardware, software, and smart imaging technology that has the potential to save billions of dollars in the autonomous vehicle, drone, transportation, industrial, and commercial satellite industries. And Inertial Sense, offering miniaturized high-performance GPS inertial navigation, attitude heading reference, and inertial measurement sensor systems for the smallest, most accurate, and cheapest sensor platforms available in the world today. These three will share a $20,000 prize, and on the 25th of April, Data Tribe will announce the winner, who will take home $2 million in seed funding. Good luck to them all.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Johannes Ulrich. He is from the SANS Technology Institute, and he's also the host of the ISC Stormcast podcast. Johannes, welcome back. You had some tips today you wanted to share about API security. What do we need to know here?
Yeah, what I really see lately when I'm talking to developers or when I'm teaching our web application security class is that most web applications today are written as APIs, as application programming interfaces. So what you do is you write an API, and then you write a modern web application that accesses it, or maybe a mobile application that accesses that API. Whenever developers, or anybody for that matter, jump sort of on these new technologies, they sadly tend to forget sort of the basics that have always been true and are still true for these APIs. So, for example, what I'm seeing here a lot is protection against brute forcing, where you have an API, for example, and I saw this recently, that allows it to reset a password, and then they sort of did the right thing. They used sort of a one-time password via SMS messages that the user had to use to acknowledge that they want to reset their password. Well, there was no brute force protection here, so it's not really all that hard to write a little script that tries all these five-digit numbers that they're going to send you and essentially brute force the reset for any password. So these are some of the simple things, but it continues with cross-site scripting, SQL injection, all of these old basic vulnerabilities. They're coming back now and just sort of wrapped in this new technology.
So in the case you just described, is it a matter of limiting the number of attempts that someone can make over a given period of time?
Yes, this would be a defense here, or just limit the number of attempts, period. So if you reset your password and then I sent you this reset code, well, I only accept three, four, or five different codes before I make you request a new code. So this would be a simple fix there. This is something that, you know, people commonly do and have done for a long time for traditional web applications. But then again, they sort of forget that these APIs that are often accessed sort of by these fairly obscure and hard to sort of reverse pieces of client-side script, that they're as vulnerable as your good old input form was on a web application.
So why do you suppose this is being overlooked? Is this a matter of people being in a hurry, or cutting and pasting, or simply negligence, or just overlooking it?
I think it's just overlooking it, and a little bit, they sort of assume that these APIs or web services are often used to talk to other web services. They don't really sort of take into account that a user sort of, or a human can sort of inject themselves and pretend to be a web service or this application that's talking to your API here. The way I always put it, just because you assume that machines talk to machines, well, not all machines are good. You just have to watch Terminator and see, you know, where it can go with the machines.
All right. It's quite a metaphor there, Johannes. As always, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. you can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
My guest today is Jimmy Heschel. He's the head of digital security at Red Bull, the global energy drink company headquartered in Austria. They sell over 6 billion cans of energy drink a year around the world, and Jimmy Heschel is responsible for making sure the company and its customers' data are protected.
So my accountability is to make sure that whatever we do at Red Bull on a global scale is done in a secure way. That means all information technology, all data privacy, all these things need to be done in a proper way and in a proper manner.
And can you give us an idea of the range of areas that covers? I mean, obviously you have employees, you have manufacturing, you have consumer-facing things.
Yeah, we have several consumer-facing areas, websites and communities we have, and we've got our core business, which is energy drinks. Which is available in 167 countries around the globe. We've got a user base of around 10,000, 11,000 internal accounts and devices, plus mobile devices, so that doubles the figures and numbers. And it's a total footprint of social media followers and all of that of around 100 million people.
And so how do you set your priorities? How do you delegate with your team for how you handle the various security challenges that you face?
That's three things. One is a management of the capabilities, where we defined the usual things you should have in place based on frameworks and standards like COVID. The second one is what I call the architecture, which is the enablers of COVID. So which tools, which organizations, which skill sets do we have? And the third driver for the priorities is a set of risks we're facing. Online risks, offline risks, all these things. And the combination of those three things then drive the priorities.
And so what currently are the things that are on your radar? What do you see as being the big threats that you have to face?
The big threats is always the disgruntled employees, disgruntled partners, vendor lock-in and cloud services, for example. Hmm. That's really driving us. And, of course, the ever-growing market of the online adversaries. So cryptocurrencies and those things that not normally, but via Trojans and other things come to our endpoints and devices and steal either computing power or, in the worst case, ask for ransom.
Have you had to face those sorts of challenges specifically? Have you had to deal with things like ransomware?
Yes, we had some occasions of ransomware up to 1.5 years ago. Total number of 150 devices that were encrypted, all single instances, so no broad encryption. Every single infection is one too much.
Now, when you're communicating the challenges that you face to your board, to the people who have hired you, how do you handle that translation of the technical side of things to managing risk?
That's a complicated thing, and I'm not very successful in that, because I try to translate it in business terms, but a company like us is not very much driven by the clear facts and figures as a bank would be, and the KPIs and the KRIs like in Basel II or other things. It's more the likelihood of an impact to our whole business and to the way we conduct our business. And it's more about telling stories and telling things what could go wrong, what went wrong at other companies, and how we need to make sure that we protect ourselves in an appropriate way.
How are you going to be affected by GDPR coming online at the end of May?
Not that much anymore. So we've been affected a lot, of course, with our digital footprint and also collecting, of course, and having the duty of protecting that information of the footprint. So many of our consumers trust us, and we need to absolutely align that trust with the capabilities we have in place. So for me, GDPR is not a legal requirement. It's a question of honesty and to be diligent with what you have and all the data you have from your stakeholders and constituents. So from now on, I can sleep really well with the GDPR requirements. I think we did our homework. No big issue in up until May.
How do you deal with the fact that Red Bull, being a global brand, you have to deal with regulations and requirements that vary from country to country and even state to state?
Yeah, compliance requirements different from various regions and countries and regulators. But luckily, we are not primarily driven by compliance requirements as a bank or an insurance company would be. So we are more driven by curiosity and flexibility and enterprise and business growth.
Yeah, it seems like Red Bull is such a strong brand and you have such strong brand loyalty that I guess one of the main risks you face is reputational damage. If you were to have some sort of major cyber-related breach, that's where you could be hit the hardest, and that's a tough thing to measure.
Absolutely, and whenever you come up with a metric for that, that metric might be a lie or unrealistic. So I'm not trying to sell risk or fear, uncertainty, and doubt throughout the company. It's more about the story and making informed decisions and aware decisions that things can go wrong. And it's very likely that things will go wrong sooner or later, but it's our duty to make sure that we are resilient enough that whenever things go wrong, we are not harmed.
That's Jimmy Heschel from Red Bull.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Puru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.